Welcome, book friends, to Let's Get Literary, the literary podcast with me, Sam Vega,
Jen Atwell,
and Courtney Berry,
where we discuss magically meaningful, or maybe terrible, books each month. Join us for a special chat.
Today we're going to be talking about On Juneteenth by Annette Gordon Reed, but we wanted to give a little bit of a history about Juneteenth first. So from history.com, Juneteenth marks the day when federal troops arrived in Galveston, Texas in 1865 to take control of the state and ensure that all enslaved people be freed. The troops' arrival came a full 2.5 years after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation. Juneteenth honors the end to slavery in the United States and is considered to be the longest-running African-American holiday. As a little bit of an overview of the book, this came out a few weeks ago, I think at the end of May. The inside of the book says, "Weaving together American history, dramatic family chronicle, and searing episodes of memoir, Annette Gordon Reed's On Juneteenth provides a historian's view of the nation's long road to Juneteenth, recounting both its origins in Texas and the enormous hardships that African Americans have endured in the centuries since, from Reconstruction through Jim Crow and beyond. All too aware of the stories of cowboys, ranchers, and oilmen that have long dominated the lore of the Lone Star State, Gordon Reed, herself a Texas native and the descendant of enslaved people, brought to Texas as early as the 1820s, forges a new and profoundly truthful narrative of her home state, one with implications for us all. Combining personal anecdotes with the poignant facts gleaned from the annals of American history, Gordon Reed shows how, from the earliest presence of black people in Texas to the day in Galveston on June 19, 1865, when Major General Gordon Granger announced the end of legalized slavery in the state, African Americans played an integral role in the Texas story. Significantly, they shared the land with indigenous people who faced their own conflicts with European Americans, creating a volatile racial tableau whose legacies still haunt us. Reworking the traditional Alamo framework, she shows us how the contentious history of the Lone Star State can provide us with a fresh and illuminating perspective on our country's past and its possible futures. In its conclusion, eloquence, and clear presentation of history, On Juneteenth vitally revises conventional renderings of Texas and national history. As our nation verges on recognizing June 19 as a national holiday, On Juneteenth is both an essential account and a stark reminder that the fight for equality is exigent and ongoing."
Thanks for that overview, Jen. So let's start with, how did we feel about the book?
I thought it was a good read. I wish there was more details about Juneteenth. And then I felt like it was just about the history of Texas versus the history of Juneteenth. And that, I mean, like reading the title, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to learn so much about it. But I just learned more about the events leading up to it rather than the actual celebration obviously we know the meaning of it, but how people celebrated it differently, you know?
Absolutely. I definitely agree there. I was going into this text hoping to learn more about that, and then I was learning more about Texas than anything, which was phenomenal. I learned things that I probably didn't learn, and she outlined a lot about the American education and how we don't learn about this specific history, the history that is of our country. We learn about the whitewashed version of, let's just talk about slavery and then we'll brush over it very quickly. It's never the talks of what actually happened and who was involved and who was affected and the key leaders in a lot of these different aspects in black history specifically.
It kind of felt like a Juneteenth sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
It talked a little bit at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I felt the center of the book was extremely educational for me. It really
yes.
made me rethink. The teacher part I enjoyed. And then it kind of repeated itself mm-hmm. at the end.
Which I kind of enjoyed. I don't know why. I really enjoyed the sandwich part because it was like, it's a lot of how I think, and the way I teach often in classes is I start with one topic and then I go all over the place. And then I'm like, okay, let's bring it back to the first, you know, piece of bread that we put in the sandwich and learn about everything. So the meat and potatoes in the middle was just perfect. I don't know why.
Did you guys have any special sections that really stuck out to you?
I mean, I think the treatment of Black men with Bob White and was it Winters, Joe Winters?
Yep.
And then the hanging of Bennett Jackson. And it wasn't as alarming how white people gathered, like the response to how white people gathered and treated it as if, like, okay, we're going to barbecue today and watch someone be lynched.
Yeah.
I'm currently in a book study on the book Cast, so that kind of prepped me. But had I read this the first time, like, my reaction to, or my response to the book Cast was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And knowing, like, the history of what the lynchings and, like, people would gather in their Sunday's best, like, go right after church.
So disgusting.
And then they would put them on, they would put the pictures on postcards, and they would send them. I mean, this is just elaborating into going a little more in detail, and I wish that that's a part of the book that would have got, you know, given a little more backstory in how it kind of was like the celebratory thing, right? Versus like, I mean, that's sickening.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what?
Like, we're sitting here watching this man who's innocent be lynched and just gathering around like, oh yeah, let's just have some hot dogs and hamburgers on the grill. Let's gather around, fam. Right. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
And I thought that the Ruby and Dude Cochran story was terrifying.
Yeah.
But terrifying, and I wish I was surprised that that was the outcome. And that shock is kind of, over the past years, faded for me. Because things don't shock me anymore. But he murdered a man in court in front of witnesses and walked out and was praised.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Praised. Absurd.
Yeah, that's scary. You know, like, to even have people think that at that time or any point in your lifetime or any point in America's history that that was okay. Because the wheel continues to reinvent itself, right?
Right.
Like the cycle.
I thought, I think we discussed this, Sam talked about this a little bit earlier. The Black teachers and how they were impacted.
Yes.
Going into classrooms. I thought that Annette's mother's response to going into classrooms with predominantly white students at some point. She said, she took joy in all of her students. But she had become a teacher to teach Black students. And that was, that entire paragraph on page 52 was just so interesting and meaningful because she wanted to make her students feel comfortable and educate them on how to lead their mission. And that was taken away from her. And she was in a foreign environment. And it just kind of made me sad altogether. But it was just so interesting because I had never thought about it. And many don't think about that impact on teachers and Black teachers. That was a really special segment to me.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, the paragraph she's referring to is, "My mother confessed later in life that while she took joy in all of her students, She had become a teacher to teach black students. "I can't talk to them the way we used to," she'd say. What she meant was that it was harder to address black students in the classroom and talk openly about their common mission of moving forward or moving the black community ahead, reminding them that it was a larger part of what their education was about. That message had no place in a what was now a predominantly white class. The mission of a lifetime had to evolve. It becomes difficult when they're not seeing that representation in the classroom and their own experiences being represented within their teachers, their professors, their, you know, leadership in different ways. And I hear her mom 1,000%, and it's the reason why I even went into education and want to teach, because let's be real, there's not a lot of representation for our students and our K through 12 kids, and it's hard for them to realize that my experiences are valid even today in, what is it, 2021, and, you know, we're still seeing a lot of the same history repeat itself. It might not be exactly how it's outlined in this book, but it's definitely an experience that our black and brown communities are experiencing on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I can echo that, right? So on two sides. So the first side, like when I read this, it didn't really hit me, because I think that was just something, or it didn't really impact me initially, because I think that was something that my parents always like instilled in me. Like my parents always wanted me to have black teachers mm-hmm. in elementary school. And my mom worked for the school board system, and so did my grandmother. And my grandmother was actually over a district, so we had a little bit of pull in that sense when I was attending like a very predominantly white school. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my grandmother was like, "Well, you're going to go to a school where your principal is black."
Yeah.
And my grandmother was an educator for 30 years. So now hearing you, Jen, like mention this, it being so impactful to you, it brings me back to like where my second grade teacher, my third grade teacher, my fourth grade teacher, and my fifth grade teacher were all black. Mm-hmm. And I always had that gave me a sense of comfort, because I always had someone who would keep it real with me.
Yeah.
Like, "Courtney, you need to get this done." And I knew the expectation, because it transferred, like there was no gap, if that made sense. So like going from, you know, coming home or going from home to school, the expectation for me to show up every day was there.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side of that, like, you know, going into coaching and mentoring, I'm here because I want to continue to provide opportunities for women of color and young women of color.
Absolutely.
But especially in the black community, because attending a PWI can be a little intimidating.
Yeah.
You know, having had experienced it. So I thank you for sharing that, Jen, because like it was like, oh, yeah. For me, it was like, duh, and I'm not just like, trying to skate over it and validate anybody. But, like, it just, you're right. It was super impactful for teachers. And, like, I can't talk to them the way I used to talk to them. Because the message is, we're going forward. Like, we're, you know, we're supporting and encouraging. Like, we ain't got time for that. Like,
mm-hmm.
you need to sit down and do your work. You need to, you know, do all the other things.
Yeah.
And the push, right? You would get more push and more encouragement. I would get more backing and support from black teachers, for sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you shared that piece about your parents, your mother always wanting a black teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So I was adopted. By a white family, magical experience for me personally. In elementary school, there was a boy my age who was also adopted, an Asian boy. I think he was maybe in the same adoption agency as me, but we were always in the same class from kindergarten to fifth grade, because my parents wanted me to know that there was another support system. There was another Asian person who looked like me who had a similar experience, and I had never thought of the value of that in most of my years until today, mm-hmm. and how loving and thoughtful that was. Grew up in Central Florida, grew up being a part of the Asian American Adoption Agency. We would get together, have Easter egg hunts, do all the dorky things that little kids love to do, mm-hmm. have amazing memories, still keep up with those children. Now they're adults, I'm an adult. but that's so meaningful, and I had never thought about that. But representation matters in being a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a kid in school learning from somebody. And this is a solid paragraph.
But if you think about the flip side of that, right? Yeah. Like a black teacher teaching white students, that is also very impactful.
Yeah.
I think more now, because it's more accepted, mm-hmm. and quote unquote tolerated, right?
Yeah.
And very much needed. So like when one of my young ladies said to me, Courtney, I am so glad that I'm learning from you. One of my white female student athletes said to me, yeah. I'm so glad that I have you in my life, because before that, like, or before this experience, before, you know, George Floyd, before all of these like current events are within the last year or so, and even more now, if she said, if you weren't my coach, I wouldn't have learned this.
Yeah.
You know, like if I didn't have a black female in my life, I would not have learned any of how black people feel or any experiences.
Yeah.
That's so magical.
I know. It's also so sad too, because it hasn't progressed much.
No. But her thinking has.
Yes. Right? Which is amazing.
And she's from Virginia.
Mm. So and like, she got it from, like, in my mind, an untraditional place.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Which is the magical part to me.
Right. And she's definitely one of those, like, I am always going to do the right thing. Like, right. I am always going to do the right thing.
I love that.
So it's for, I think, just having that, the flip side of that is super impactful too. Like, teaching white students, mm-hmm. and having white students in your class, like, it's awesome. Because they have to learn it from somewhere. And I always say, like, if I can't teach them, if I don't teach them, I'm not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's great. Another interesting tidbit that I thought was Six Flags. The story of Six Flags being in this, I didn't expect.
Yeah.
And why it's Six Flags, had no idea.
Me either.
But in chapter 4, where they were talking about categorizing people into whites and non-whites, it reminds me, and I was thinking about this, of the way that we as humans fill out questionnaires. Number one, we love a category. We've always loved a category.
Love it.
We love to categorize cheeses. We love to categorize people. We love all the things. But I think, and maybe this exists in the world, I think it would be interesting to create a questionnaire about humans where they have to fill out their race if they so chose to, mm-hmm. but put all of the others out as a choice and just see how to begin the process of more equality on a questionnaire. That's what that segment reminded me of, because we love to do categories, white, non-white, others. Expand that.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
It reminded me of Sam when we read Stamped from the Beginning.
Yes.
And all of the color theory that was written in that. If anybody has not read Stamped from the Beginning or would like to read Stamped from the Beginning, I would maybe recommend the kids' version. I haven't read it, but the larger version was a lot. And we read it over multiple months.
Yeah.
Multiple months. But in the book, they talked a lot about color theory, mm-hmm. and how white was always the number one choice.
White is right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then reading reading about people categories just always makes me think of white is right and how we can normalize or assist in a small way of putting everyone else out there. But that was a meaningful section to me.
Yeah, and it goes into like colorism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all communities.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not just people of color, but all of it expands. It's expansive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you guys, I found a lot of meaning in the section on Sojourner Truth and the constant, consistent misrepresentation mm-hmm. in language, in speech.
Mm.
On page 64, yep. reproductions of her speech were written in the stereotypical dialect universally chosen to portray the speech of enslaved blacks, no matter where in the country they lived. It talks about different people, always assuming that they, when representing them again, had a certain dialect, no matter where they were from, no matter where they grew up, shocked that somebody, that a black person could know French, learn French. And then it goes on, and on page 70, one of my favorite quotes from this section, blackness does not equal inherent incapacity and natural limitation.
Yes.
Yes.
That gave me all the vibes there.
This and the entire section was on languages learned, educational, and how blacks were constantly just misrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How dare they learn French, know multiple language, communicate with me? How do they even know how to communicate with me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a learning experience, and it was shocking.
Mm-hmm.
But blackness does not equal inherent incapacity and natural limitation.
Yep. It's almost like that shock value that people get when you say, or a black child or a black person says, I graduated from Harvard, or I graduated from Rollins. Like the shock value of that.
They're like, whoa. That happened. And it's like, what?
It's a school.
It's a school.
I use my brain.
I got here.
I have a brain. We all have brains.
Right.
Sometimes it works a little bit extra hard for me.
Yeah.
Just sometimes.
But, yeah. Jen, you were hitting some good points, girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to read the books most of the time. I struggle with reading the books and taking notes because it makes me read it a lot slower.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I tried to write some meaningful quotes down.
Yeah.
I'm going to read one more. Communities on page 108, chapter 5, Remember the Alamo. Communities can be held together by positive myths and legends or negative ones. That continues maybe pages later. The chief difficulty lies in how people of color can fit into the legends and myths about Texas when the actual historical experiences of Native Americans, Blacks, and Mexicans wreak havoc with those legends and myths. I said this at the beginning, but I really thought that the meat and potatoes or the lettuce and tomato of the book was just so educational and informative.
Yes.
Yeah, and also knowing that Texas is operated as its own entity, as its own country. I kind of knew that a little bit before this, I was like, who would want to live in Texas?
Right.
As she wrote at the beginning, Texas is a white man.
Yeah. You're right.
But then in the coda, she talks about how she loves Texas. And that was special because it's not about loving Texas for what it is or was. It's about loving the memories with her family,
yep.
Yes.
Where her home is, where her first home was.
Mm-hmm.
That's personally why I love Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff around.
Yeah.
But the memories with my family, with my friends, with my really long Rollins career. Yeah. It's all, it occurred in Florida, but it's not why I love Florida.
Yeah.
No. It occurred in Florida and is why I love Florida.
Exactly.
Not all the other stuff happening that I can not control enough of.
Right. I think I can relate it to Rollins, in a sense. Love this place. Love it. There's a lot of things, a lot of memories as a student, like going through my, you know, having memories of my parents coming to my games, me experiencing me kind of like growing into a woman and womanhood in my own, in a sense. And then like the historic, the history that, you know, the year, my senior year that we set the stage with. And I think that all has great memories. And then also me working here, you know, within the struggles of working here. But it's the reason why I'm still here.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're like, how could someone love Texas?
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not so much the struggles as it is seeing the rewards, I guess, and the memories that you have.
I think this weirdly ties into the quote about not dwelling on tragedy. It's on page 29. As painful as it may be, recognizing, though not dwelling on, tragedy and the role it plays in our individual lives and in the life of a state or nation is, I think, a sign of maturity.
Absolutely. Just thinking about where we progress from, while it might not be much, you know, there's still that small step forward that we've taken, and something that I definitely want to make sure that we focus on going into the future. Let's continue to march. Let's continue to activate. Let's continue to do the things that, you know, let people know that we're angry and we're feeling and we have this sadness inside of us. And also let's celebrate and have a block party and, you know, come in community together, because being in community together is what also helps us realize that I'm not the only one. I'm not alone. I also have Courtney. I also have Jen. I also have my family and my friends that are in the area that I can turn to if I'm just like, man, this is some terrible stuff that we're dealing with. And also let's celebrate, you know, what we've done so far. We've celebrated Courtney this past year for all of her accomplishments and the things that she's done. And it's something that we want to continue to do and continue to move forward and push forward into our future, especially within not only our roles, but our personal lives.
Yeah. Community is important. And it's so nice to have, it's just so nice to have people that you can just walk into their office and be like, girl.
Yes.
Today was a day. Right?
Yeah.
Or like the other part that I enjoy, I brought like my entire backpack because I'm like, you know what? I just might work somewhere else today. So I don't have to be stuck in my office, and I just probably need a change of scenery.
Yeah.
Outside in the library in one of the many buildings on campus.
Right.
Where you can engage with people.
Right. Yeah. And just like, it's just comforting. When I was pregnant, I would go into Destiny's office and Abby's office and Mr. Robert all the time, like, y'all, I just need 10 minutes. Please give me 10 minutes. And they're like, you can stay as long as you want. I took that as my invitation just to keep coming.
Perfect.
Yes.
It's nice. It's nice to have community. It's important.
Absolutely.
Because it feels like family, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't really have to try.
Right.
You can just be who you are.
That's something that I always look for in just wherever I'm living, because all of my family's in New York. So being able to find somebody that I can go to and literally just take that deep breath and like really just let the weight off of my shoulders for a minute and say, oh, this has been a day.
Yeah.
Or just saying, I'm struggling this week. I don't know who to talk to. And,
right.
You know, just being able to turn to one of y'all and just be like, hey, what's going on? Can I sit in your office for 5 minutes?
I know. And, you know, what's really funny is I listened to Higher Learning Podcast with Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay. Favorite podcast ever. And yes, was that Friday? I think Van was talking about Louisiana. Like, what is... They have like a section where they answer questions from their audience. And I think one of the questions was, what about the South? Like, you growing up in the South, what has that taught you? And what is one thing that, you know, like, you'll never forget or that you appreciate? And Van is from Baton Rouge. He's from Louisiana. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I got the city right, but I know he's from Louisiana. And, like, knowing the history of Louisiana, and it touched on this in the book as well a little bit, but knowing the history of Louisiana in the South as a Black male, he said, there was a time when, you know, the weather would be really bad and it would rain really hard and it was like hurricane season. And then everyone would be inside and, you know, just waiting to come outside. He said, there's a point after the storm has gone through and passed, to where, like, the rain is settling in. I can't remember whatever word, the other words he used, but the rain is, like, kind of settling into the cement, and people come outside and they finally play, and, like, people are gathering. But as much as we fight and we argue, you know, as a community, or, you know, we battle each other despite race, like, that is a moment that we all can enjoy together. Mm-hmm. And he said, I look for that wherever I go.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. now he lives in California, and he's like, I'm constantly looking for a place that, like, is just like home.
Yeah.
You know, just like you said, like, I'm constantly looking for, you know, you didn't grow up here, mm-mm. you know? So you're looking for the next place you go. You're constantly looking for a community like that to support you.
Yeah.
And whether it, no matter what, you know, no matter what it is, despite differences.
It's like looking for a hug.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not even a big hugger.
Me
but
either.
That's what that's what you look for when you look for community.
Yes.
A physical hug or a mental hug, or it's like looking for a hug. So to end this off, I thought it would be fun if we rated the book on a scale of 1 to 5. And then whether we would recommend it to our friends. And then what our choice emoji would be to describe this book.
Ooh, I'm going to have to look at the emojis.
So let's start with the ratings.
I would definitely say 4-star, and I only say 4-star because I was looking for the Juneteenth history and backing and all of that fun stuff. So I would say 4-star because of that reason. But in terms of content, definitely 5-stars. She delved into it and really, really gave her perspective. So I really appreciated that side of it.
I think for me, 3 stars. It was extremely informative. But it was not what I expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It had great points that taught me a lot. But I wanted more education on Juneteenth.
Yeah.
Courtney?
I'm going to be somewhere in the middle. I'm going to do 3.5. Because okay. I did want some more tea on Juneteenth. Like, yeah. I want more of it. But you said, like you said, it was very informative, very educational. But I definitely, 3.5 for sure.
Solid.
Yeah.
Love that.
Would we recommend?
Absolutely.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Everyone needs more correct history.
Thank
lessons.
You.
Yeah. But, like, growing up in Florida, did you...
No.
Right?
And I have to wonder,
St. Augustine.
What are they teaching? Right.
Because we visited St. Right. Augustine.
Right, yes. And Florida history. I wish I remembered more about Florida history, but what are they teaching now? Has this changed since mm-hmm. we are more aware in the world? I have to wonder.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not committed enough to go ask history teachers from high school.
Yeah.
But I have to wonder.
Well, I think we learned Florida history in 4th grade. And I think we revisited it in middle school.
I did.
But
in high
I don't remember
too.
High school. I'm not sure. But I remember going to St. Augustine in 4th grade because mm-hmm. everyone was like, oh, that's it's a place to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ponce de Leon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? Like, was he good? I don't know. Pocahontas? Like,
the movie.
Right.
That's the movie. Disney, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
But
Disney is a different time. But, like, seriously, I...
St. Augustine.
Yeah.
What emoji? So I think for me, it would be, like, I know that there's one in front of a green chalkboard with the teacher.
Yes.
I think I would choose that one.
Okay.
I'm going to have to look at these emojis.
Maybe the black teacher in front of a chalkboard would be my choice emoji. That's what I thought about last night, at least.
Okay.
I'd probably do the thinking emoji because it had me thinking about a lot of the history that I learned in middle school and high school, and I didn't learn any of this stuff, so I'm kind of interested to learn what our children are going to be learning in the future.
Yeah. The thinking one is this one?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm in a cross between that one and...
You guys can't see it, but Courtney is on her phone looking at all of the choices.
Because I don't really use emojis, you know?
Except for the purple heart.
That's my go-to.
There are a lot of emojis.
I know.
Sorry we didn't prepare you for this in the beginning.
No, it's okay. I think I would do... Oh, no, I found it. Okay. And it's under the family one. Okay, so it's the one that has, and you probably have never seen this one because I have never seen it. But it's the one with the blue and the red rope that like intertwine.
Oh, that must be a newer one.
So maybe like bridging.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or like tying together, coming together.
Mm-hmm. It's in the family section of emojis.
It's in the
everybody.
Family section.
Okay.
Well. This was fun.
This was so much fun.
Our first podcast
recording. It's fun.
Thank you for joining us, Courtney.
Yes, hey. Thank you for having me. I had so much fun.
Great. See you guys next month. Well, you'll hear us next month. Let's Get Literary is co-hosted by Sam Vega, Jen Atwell, and Courtney Berry at Rollins College. Each month, you'll find a new episode on a book we've chosen for many of the Cultural Heritage Months. On occasion, we might choose a special and meaningful book to us to discuss. We'll chat about books and give you a sneak peek into what we'll be discussing next. Have a love for books and want to be a guest host or suggest a book for discussion? Email us at cici@rollins.edu. cici@rollins.edu.